So when I was in high school, I was a band kid. I played percussion. And my band director, let's call him Mr. Jones, because that was his name, was also a writer, a composer, mostly of high school band music, the kind of music you might sight read at a UIL competition here in Texas. And he needed to record a demo for his publisher, so he got with his friends at the Austin Symphonic Band to do a quick recording of his new piece. Well, they were short on a percussionist, so he invited me. And it was a tremendous honor. I felt pretty cool about myself. I got to go into the big city and, record with real, accomplished musicians on a thing that was, well, it seemed important. Now, I was playing the cymbals, which is actually a little bit more complicated than they might seem, but the thing about cymbals is you can't get your part wrong. If you mess up, it's going to be really obvious. Well, I think you can see where this is going. Flash forward to the end of the piece that I'm sight reading, and there's a big series of syncopated cymbal crashes that don't quite fit on the rhythm, but are very loud and very important. And sure enough, when we go to record this demo, I got them wrong. My cymbal crashes were in the wrong place. I screwed up. I did it wrong. I was embarrassed. I mean, I got brought in to do this job, and I didn't do it right. And there's a lot of feelings that go with that, disappointment and shame, and maybe you want to apologize to someone, say, oh, sorry, you didn't mean to do that, and I didn't mean to screw anything up, and then people come back to you, and they say, oh, that's okay, you know, so then, you know, don't worry about it, and then it becomes kind of a thing, right? It becomes the thing of embarrassment. Well, I don't think I'm being presumptive if I say that most people attending this meeting of the EdTech Club this week have been embarrassed in some similar way over the course of their lifetimes, either at school or work or at home or everywhere. It's just something that happens. And of course, as educators, when you're trying to create a safe and open environment for students, one where they can express themselves and one where they can learn from their experiences, their successes, and their failures, well, you know that you have to accept that sometimes embarrassing things are going to happen. And with young people, it's really important to make sure they understand that embarrassment is a part of life. And it's something we can deal with. So this week we're talking about embarrassment in the EdTech Club. And our guest speaker is children's book author Charisse Miracle Harper. Her latest book, So Embarrassing, is a kind of comic book or graphic novel, but it's pretty big and pretty meaty with lots of different examples that help young people understand what they're feeling when they feel embarrassed, how they might be able to control it, and how they might be considerate of the embarrassment of others. So, Charisse is going to be talking to us about the process of creating her new book, So Embarrassing, Awkward Moments and How to Get Through Them. It's out this week, and she's going to tell us what she learned in this process about embarrassment, new ways of being embarrassed, and what she learned about how students think about embarrassment and how they can share their own embarrassing experiences. Sounds tough, but it can actually be a lot of fun and really useful. And that's what we're talking about in this week's meeting of the EdTech Club. And it all starts right now. Hey everyone, welcome back to another meeting of the EdTech Club, the podcast from TCEA. I'm your host, Andrew Rausch. And this week, a discussion with children's book author and illustrator Charisse Miracle Harper about her new book, So Embarrassing, Awkward Moments, and How to Get Through Them, out this week. There's nothing else to say except let's get this conversation started.
My name is Charisse Miracle Harper. I'm an author and illustrator of children's books. I have been doing this for quite a while. I started my career as a cartoonist. I did a weekly comic strip in a paper in Chicago and a bunch of other alternative papers, and then moved into picture books. And then from picture books, I felt a little more confident because I started out feeling very confident about illustration and not so confident about writing. And then I started writing my first chapter book, and which ultimately became a series of 12. And then, you know, by that point, I think I felt pretty confident about my writing skills. And so now where I am in my career is that I feel pretty confident about my writing skills and maybe not so confident about my illustration skills. So I've kind of moved, you know, the writing has taken over from the illustration, but I still do like to illustrate. I'm just not, you know, I'm not one of those people that can draw something in perspective. So
you flexed one muscle for a while and then you flexed another muscle and you're kind of trying to get fit, right? That's how a lot of work goes.
So that's where I am today. I mean, I think I, you know, my illustration style is very comic and cartoonish, and I mean, I'm comfortable with it and I like it. I am not you know, going to win the Caldecott for my illustrations, but that's okay. they work for what I'm doing. So I'm happy about that.
And thinking about what it is you're doing, how did you make that transition? You were an illustrator. What inspired you to write children's books?
Well, I had a huge, and this is way before I had children. So I had a huge collection of children's books, mostly because I loved the illustration style. It seemed like there was so much freedom in children's books for illustration. You could experiment. You could, you know, tell a story with interesting, you know, graphics and interesting illustration styles that were not, you know, you weren't going to see those in advertising commercials, or you weren't going to see those maybe in album covers a little bit, but you weren't going to see that kind of flexibility anywhere else. And so I was drawn to children's books because of the flexibility of the medium. And then I was also, as I said, doing comics. And at that point I had done probably, I don't know, 6 or 7 years of doing that, my cartoon strip. So I had a lot of comics, and someone introduced me to an agent, and he said, oh, I can sell these comics for you and make a book. And I was very excited. And so he came back but a couple months later and said, nah, there's no future in comics. I can't sell these things. I was like, oh, so disappointed. He said, but if you want to try making a children's book, maybe I could sell that. But the fact that he was somebody who I had respect for, and he was telling me I could do it, made me feel like, oh, maybe I should try. You know, nobody had ever suggested that before. And I think that's just so interesting that it had to be somebody that was outside of my circle, you know, outside of the people I knew and outside of, you know, my own friends to suggest to do it, that I could really believe that maybe I would succeed at that, or at least wanted to give it a try. And so, you know, I did. I made a couple presentations, and he took them around, and ultimately I was able to sell my first picture book. And after that, I was like, this is what I want to be doing.
And so your latest book is called So Embarrassing: Awkward Moments and How to Get Through Them. And I've looked through the book, and I think calling it even a picture book feels a little like an undersell. It's almost like a graphic novel in a sense. The illustrations are great. They're full color throughout, and you got all kinds of interesting layouts, and the way you styled these pages and things is really fascinating and worth a look for anyone. And in general, the message is really interesting. So tell us about this book, So Embarrassing, what inspired it and what it is about.
You know, I'm very excited about how the world is embracing graphic novels right now, because it's really it's the way I started, you know, presenting myself to the world, and it's my favorite way to tell a story, using words and pictures and playing with the medium. I like to play around with it. So I was trying to think of a book that I could do that had a nonfiction element to it, but that would be fun for kids to read, but then wouldn't be super research heavy for me, because, you know, once it gets I'm not a nonfiction writer. I like to have the ability to make things up and be whimsical. And so I didn't want to get bogged down with a ton of research, but I'm happy to always do some research and have some factual information in whatever I'm doing. So I thought about a lot of different ideas. The first idea I thought about was games, like what kind of games we play, what kind of games we make up, you know, I had some friends that had interesting games when they were a kid, and we played interesting games when I was a kid that we made up. And those were the games that, you know, I really remember. And then from there, I was like, you know, had some problems and thought that may not work. And then I came upon the idea of embarrassment. And when I was thinking about doing this book, I was doing a school visit in Southern Oregon, and I was talking to a bunch of fifth graders. And I did my presentation for the book I was there for. And then afterwards, we had some free time. And so I had made a little comic that I just showed them quickly about embarrassment. It's something that happened to me in third grade. And I said, you know, does anybody want to share an embarrassment story with me? And I thought, you know, okay, maybe I'll get like two or three brave kids putting their hands up if I'm lucky. And we were in a room and there were probably, you know, 60 kids. And I couldn't believe it. I had like 30 kids with their hands up wanting to share their stories. And they were so excited to talk about it. And as they talked about it, you know, kids kept putting their hands up and the same kid would put their hand up again to tell me another story. And I could see that the teachers were like looking at each other like, what's going on here? This isn't even what she's here for. And the bell rang and the teachers had to yell at them a couple times to leave because they were just crowded around me and wanting to tell me their embarrassing stories. And I thought, this is amazing. And first of all, I was incredibly surprised. I had no idea that kids in fifth grade would be so eager to share that information. And secondly, you know, it made me think about it, that they really don't have any opportunities to talk about that. It's not like someone, you know, says to a bunch of kids, let's talk about the time we were embarrassed. And so I did some research and there wasn't a book about it. And I thought, you know what, this might be just my sweet spot for this. This sounds like something I could handle. First of all, because I get embarrassed a lot. I do a lot of embarrassing things. And it rang all the bells for me. I just felt like this is a good fit. And this is something I can really play with and have fun and impart some knowledge to some kids. And so I did. The book has a lot of nonfiction elements in it. And it has a cast of characters that are participating in different kinds of embarrassment. And, you know, you can watch them and see what happens. And as a reader, you can choose, you know, I would do that or I wouldn't do that. Or boy, that's a bad choice that character made. And so it's not all, you know, here's a problem and here's how to solve it. A lot of it is just watching what's happening in the story and maybe thinking about it a little bit afterwards. One of the stories, I don't know how many times I got the story that, you know, they'd fallen through a screen door or fallen through a glass door. That was a popular one. And I would have never thought of that. And I put it in the book because the kids, you know, had talked about it. So I thought, you know, I got to include this for them. So I think it's kind of multi-layered. And I don't think you can actually have solutions for embarrassing situations in all cases. And I think that's what makes it sort of, you know, sort of a little bit slippery in the sense that there isn't just one way to do this. There's, you know, there's a lot of things you can choose. And I think it does, you know, the fact that it always is a surprise is also an element that is, you know, something that is hard to prepare for. You know, you can't, you know, it's not like you get any warning.
Right. Right. And I think it, you know, there's all sorts of ways to come out of an embarrassing situation that can be good or bad. I mean, you know, one thing you talk about in the book too, there's a whole section, a whole chapter on blushing, which I probably wouldn't have even ever thought of, but you dig into it and you investigate the feelings that come with that. Not only that, but there's some surprising bits, you know, in this section in particular, like blushing can make people like you more.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting too, in the sense that if people see somebody physically showing the signs of blushing and being embarrassed, what that relates to the people watching is that that person has empathy and is trustworthy because they have felt the embarrassment of breaking the social norms or whatever, you know, the situation might be. And so that person is ultimately deemed more trustworthy than somebody who perhaps didn't blush. And not to accuse people that don't blush of not being trustworthy, but, you know, I think we got to give something extra to those people's face who turns bright red all the time, as mine does, to hold on to so they could feel a little more confident, because that is something you have to overcome. But I learned a lot of different things in this book. And hopefully some of them I can, you know, figure out when I get embarrassed the next time, which is probably not that far away, knowing me.
That's right. And not far away for any of us, I think. And part of it is these characters in the book, they interrogate these situations. You know, they have discussions or they go through a little process or they have their own internal monologue where they think about these embarrassing situations. And I have to imagine for students, for young people, it's helpful to kind of get to the why of these sorts of questions. Like, why am I embarrassed? Or why is it considerate to understand your own body odor, for example?
Right. So I like to do that. I like to play with the format and even have the characters address the book, the narrator in the book as someone who's actually punishing them too much at some one point. They're just really frustrated that all these embarrassing things have happened to them, which I thought was fun. And, you know, I connect with the narrator because that's me. So they're my real life little characters punishing me, asking me why am I being so mean to them. I think that there is that sort of why me situation to embarrassment too. There is no real reason why the universe chooses you to fall over the vacuum cleaner or trip on something outside and then everybody laughs. But I think it's helpful to know that it happens to everybody. And really that was the big lesson that I wanted the kids to feel, that they weren't alone, that embarrassment happens to everybody and it happens across all ages. And it's something that has to be endured. I didn't address this in the book, but you can't really live your life in a state of trying to avoid embarrassment constantly. Otherwise you'd never go anywhere. Right. And there is ultimately, you have to break through the fear of failure or embarrassment to actually move ahead in life. But I felt like that was too much of a big life lesson for the book. So maybe another book, but I just really wanted kids to feel that they were part of a community of other people that had shared embarrassing stories too.
And one interesting thing about, sharing embarrassment, you have a section in the book about advice. And I have to think as a young person, like that understanding of, I can reach out to someone when they're embarrassed is powerful. But you also interrogate that a little bit. It's called, what is this section called? Let me make sure I get it right. Advice, the okay, the bad, and the terrible. Tell us a little bit about that section and what you were thinking about. Okay, you've been embarrassed. What next?
A little bit of that comes from my own kids and probably my daughter, who's a little bit older than the age group for this book. And I just realized with her how important the opinions and the advice of her peers is, in relation to the advice that I give her or, other people that she, trusts. And so I don't think a parent can solve every problem for a child, because I think that sometimes maybe you don't even hear about the problem, for one. And second, that their kids are getting advice from all sorts of other people. So I just wanted to share that you have to be a little bit careful about where you're going to get your advice from. And maybe that was more of a parenting part of me saying that than, feeling like a kid, because I think that if in middle school, if you're ultimately looking to your middle school friends for advice, it doesn't mean it's going to be bad, but it also doesn't mean it's going to be great, And I think that you are all at that age, you're all going through the same thing and you're all sort of dealing with this new world of social norms and your body's changing and there's so much that's changing. It's hard to find stable ground. And even someone that just says, I know what you should do, is maybe not the best place to go. So that was kind of like that. And I think that I do go to the therapist and talk about, this is the really good advice. This is someone you should listen to. So hopefully that resonates a little bit.
Yeah. And you do have licensed counselor in the book. Grace Wylin makes an appearance.
to sort of give the reader a sense of how they can understand and control their embarrassment as well, right? That is part of knowing that it's not something that's just happening internally to you, but rather that embarrassment is a social thing. And there are things we can do to take control and things we can do to think about it and things we can do to be considerate when others are embarrassed.
Yeah, I really liked how she suggested that you make embarrassment a character, or you come up with, you know, whatever the embarrassment or the embarrassing situation is that's replaying in your head. You make that a character, or you give it an identity, and then you take control of it. And you're like, you know what, you know, Bob, let's say you name the embarrassment Bob, you can't control my life. You're just, you know, and I do think that there's some, you know, there's some strength in actually thinking about it that way, because it takes you out of the emotion. So I feel like that could be helpful.
Right. I have a bizarro Andrew who lives in me, and he does all the embarrassing things, but he's not me entirely.
Right. Yeah. So that, I mean, that's helpful, right? I think it's kind of like, it's helpful. What I try to do is I think what you have to do is you have to remove yourself from the situation to be able to make a good choice of what to do next in an embarrassing situation. I try to think about, okay, if I'm watching from above and Charisse is in a movie, what would I want Charisse to do right now? You know, if she's a character, what do I want her to do? And very often it's not what I feel like I want to do. You know, it's not always the same thing. So I think, you know, that's interesting, because I think emotionally you can make decisions that maybe aren't the best choice.
Yeah. And as the book is almost sort of structured sequentially or chronologically, because at the beginning we're getting this sense of what embarrassment is, how it happens, how universal it truly is, and the emotions involved. And we can then think about how to control and understand these things. And by the end, we've gotten to the chapter called One Day It Will Be a Good Story. Which I think a lot of people think about when something embarrassing happens, at least when you're a grown up. But when you're a kid, you don't always have the benefit of knowing that, because you haven't had embarrassing things that happened years and years ago that, you know, became stories, right?
Right. And I don't think as a kid that is going to be particularly helpful in the close proximity to your embarrassing situation, that you're going to feel like, oh, one day this will be a great story. Great. I'll put this in my back pocket. Now I move forward. I think it stays with them a little longer than that. But I wanted to include that mostly to say that, you know, embarrassment happens to everybody. And here's all these other people that have had embarrassing stories, and so many years later, they still remember them. And I think it's true. Those stories stay with you for an awful long time.
This is a slightly tangential, but speaking of the characters in the book, there's one I want to talk about. Now, teachers love credentials. They love showing off that they've gotten their professional learning. And the popular way to do it these days is with badges. You even have a character in this book called Badgie. Can you tell us about him or her or them?
Right. I think it's a him. Okay. Badgie is just a giant badge, and he gives out badges to make people feel better about their situation. And I actually love badges. I have a collection of vintage Boy Scout badges that I love. And I don't know. I feel like, you know, that there's so many awards given for physical sporting event things all the time. I happen to have two kids that are not very sporty, and I'm not very sporty. So we've never been in the sporty club or anything, which is fine. I mean, I think sports are great for community and team building and all those things, but it just hasn't been our journey. And I always felt like, well, you know, it would really be fun to get a badge for something that you did in life that was kind of hard for you to overcome, but you did it. And it wasn't something that maybe everybody's going to notice or everybody's going to, you know, clap for you. So that's kind of what Badgie is. He's kind of like that support of, here, you did a good job. You did a badge. Now you're going to feel better. And of course, you know, a badge doesn't really erase an embarrassment, but I think it's a nice memento.
Right. And you do even have the playful disclaimer that there's no guarantee that any of the badges will help, but at least Badgie's trying.
Right.
And that's kind of, you know, at the end of the day, what you should be doing is trying, especially when it comes to something like embarrassment, which you can't entirely prevent, let's say, but you can control a little bit, right?
Right. Yeah. And I think also that you can just, you know, like Badgie, it rushes to help everybody feel better. I think as a friend, that's what we should be doing too. You know, when somebody had something go wrong or our friend fell, and I think a lot of kids do, you know, you rush to help them and you help them feel better and you tell them, oh, that's, you know, I fell too. And that's happened to me. And, you know, you sort of form this little community around those people that you care about to help them through it. And I think that's super helpful as well. And I think, you know, there's a lot of kids that are doing that and are seeing that.
Okay, this is a little embarrassing on my part, but I let this meeting run a little long. So before I let you go real quick, there is homework. Check out the related readings, the links in the description to this episode. And if you're not checking out the description to this episode, that might mean you're not subscribed. So get out there and subscribe to this podcast, share it, rate it, review it, and help us get more members of the EdTech Club. And while we're here catching up, don't forget, you can earn a little extra credit. Go check out our 2021 TCEA Convention and Exposition. It's our organization's hallmark event, and this year it is going fully virtual. That means more ways to learn and more time to do it in, more time to interact, connect, and experience an amazing interactive event that really stretches out the learning through the whole month of February. But you don't have to take my word for it. You can go check it out on the website and get registered at convention.tcea.org. Okay, that's the last plug. The bell is about to ring. I know you're all ready to go. Once again, our thanks to Charisse Miracle Harper and all of you for joining us for this meeting of the EdTech Club. Of course, we'll be back for another one in a week. But until then, I'm Andrew Rausch. Thanks for being part of the club. EdTech Club is a production of TCEA. To learn more and to join, go to tcea.org.